Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling back in the United States of America. It's JJ Devaney. What's up, baby?
You've just made it awkward straight from the get-go.
How are things? How was your flight home? How was everything? You sent me a picture of a beautiful Irish sunset.
Yeah, out in my backyard, back home. Yeah. Beautiful. Absolutely great. Great to see everybody. Great to see the family. We did our podcast. I come back refreshed. Got my ticket today for the Champions League final.
I think we make do the best we can when we're not in the same room. I think those podcasts still sound like, I think if people listened to that one last week, I think they're fine with those. But this is the human interaction. I need to see you roll your eyes at my comments. I need that visual.
Yeah. I can't believe you just glossed over what I said. I got my ticket for the Champions League final.
Oh, well, of course, right? Like, you're going. I don't know. I guess I just assumed. Yeah, he's going to Kiev.
You crushed me for booking the flights before I got my ticket. And yeah, now I tell you I've got my ticket and you're like, meh.
Yeah, I thought about that afterwards.
Steve Beck, by the way, Liverpool fan who's helped me out with a ticket. Thought I'd give him a shout out. Great scouser. Nice. He's flying to Poland, taking a 10-hour bus to Kiev.
That sounds just awful.
What are you talking about? That is a supporter, man.
Yeah, good for him.
You know, we've got the best supporters in the world.
Fine.
Good man, Steve. Thank you, buddy.
I thought more about how I crushed you for having bought your plane ticket before a game ticket. And while I do stand by that, I did think about it, and I wanted to ask you, are your plane tickets refundable? So, like, if you had never gotten a game ticket and you wanted to, you know, abort, you could have done that?
Yeah, I think I can up until so many hours.
You actually don't even know. So you bought the plane tickets not even knowing if that was possible. So I am still...
There's no magnificence in your life. There is no sense of adventure. Everything is one long, deathly boring road to death for you.
That's not true. I resent that. My alarm went off in the middle of the night again the other night. That was adventurous.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know how much I should say or not say, because my wife is a hero, the way she reacts. This is now the third... since we started doing
Amanda,
this podcast...
get the gun!
The way she just always snaps into superhero mode while screaming in horror on this assumption that an intruder's in the house is just so funny to me, if I also weren't so petrified by the situation.
Every one of her alarms in the middle of the night or reasons to wake up in the middle of the night is the script from the new Gabrielle Union film, isn't it?
I'm not familiar with that film.
Is it Gabrielle Union? It's basically House Invaders.
Oh, I don't even want to talk about it. Honestly, I called Sloman's the next day. I said, this can't go on anymore. I can't live like this. You don't go back to sleep afterwards. You're terrified. I can't do it. So somebody's changing the whole system. But hey, what a show we have coming up for you. Obviously, we'll take a look back. You and I will kind of do a brief look back on the weekend that was, because even though it was the final conclusion of this season, there was very little drama to it. Most of what went down, we already knew for at least 2 weeks or so now. With the exception of the fourth Champions League spot, but even that lacked all sense of drama whatsoever. But we will reflect on the
Championship
season.
Sunday on NBC.
One of our favorite people to talk to, of course, Craig Burley. Got to get final thoughts from him. So we will. We will speak to him shortly. Red card, man of the match, mailbag, all that delightful stuff. And Wednesday, for those who were downloading this podcast hoping that tonight was the Devunlings, this is the red carpet special. Wednesday will be the actual show.
Yeah, this is the Seacrest part of the show.
Yeah. So let's get into it, my friend. A few of the big stories from this past week.
I've got fatigue.
We can't even get through the opening words, and you're already bored.
Don't forget, I was on the plane for much of this, and I've watched highlights since. Yeah. And, you know, whatever.
So should we just, like, you want me to just hit the close now?
Take it later, folks.
All right, that's the end of the show. I hope you all enjoy that. I mean, what do we do? We just aren't going to talk about it.
Yeah, but let's be dispassionate and fatigued, like the two millennials we are.
Well, there's actually some stuff that I'm not necessarily dispassionate and fatigued about.
Okay, go on.
Well, I want to talk to you a little bit, at least, about Chelsea, because I find this the whole end of their season, and you and I have kind of gone back and forth on the blame game.
I put it squarely at Roman Abramovich.
Right.
I don't feel the manager has had the backing at board level. I'm going to ask Craig Burley when he comes on about this. Does he have any take on this? But I am solidly in the Conte tent.
I thought what happened this past weekend with them was pretty embarrassing. And I think that it's really letting a lot of people off the hook when you lay blame only at the foot of Roman Abramovich. I think that it's letting the players completely off the hook. I think it's letting this manager off the hook who couldn't get his team motivated for what was...
Yeah.
Look, they didn't know what was going to happen in the Liverpool match. This was the biggest game of their season, they were so flat.
Have you seen members of this team down tools before?
Yes.
Yes. They do that. We've seen it. They know. It's almost instinctive. Like when I was in Ireland... The cows in the fields in Ireland.
Oh, my God.
They know. It sounds like a Cantona quote, doesn't it? The fish, the troller. But the cows know when it's going to rain. They know when the weather's turning.
They find higher ground.
Oh, my God. You stop. Let me get through this analogy, please. They go to the trees, and underneath the trees, they take shelter, and they lie down. The cows know. Chelsea players are like cows in that they know with the way the wind is going at board level. And the conversations and the kind of ultimatums that were issued by the manager about he needs this, he needs that, and he's not getting it.
Well, I will continue.
And the Chelsea job is a job of you get in, you get success, or you get out. Or you get in, you get success, and you still get out.
I think it was on NBC this past week and after the games, the Robbies and Arlo and Kyle, they did kind of a special wrap-up. And I don't remember who it was, but one of them brought up a good point that what you're talking about right now, I mean, it destroys this team. It's the prime example of why the stable teams, the ones that keep stability at that, specifically at that position of management, are the teams that tend to succeed. Now, Chelsea do succeed, but in this manner.
Is that even necessarily true anymore? I mean, Liverpool have almost how many years of stability? 2012 to 2015 under Brendan Rodgers, what was achieved? He had to go. The turnover for managers is much quicker now. Wenger. Look at his last 10 years as well. That's not necessarily true, and I think Chelsea identified
but
that.
But by and large, this was a very good generation for Arsenal. Obviously, Manchester United under Alex Ferguson, Spurs right now with Pochettino. I think the clubs that have stability at management, the Chelsea players, okay, like you're talking about, they know that they can just give up because their manager will be gone.
Right.
They know that, this guy, I don't have to play for this guy because I can't stand him anymore. I can't stand his face. He's going to be gone in a week anyway, so what am I doing busting my rear?
Ultimately, where does that come from? Board level.
Right. So they are to blame.
Yeah.
Conte is to blame. The players are to blame. A situation like this, I feel like you don't have something like this and only be able to blame one person. Look, I'm never going to change off of the opinion of Chelsea finishing where they finished. I was never asking them to go out and repeat and win the league. I understand how difficult that is. But for them to have just been as poor as they were for much of the season, that's not even fair. For the second half of the season, they were second. On, I think, Christmas or New Year's, they were second in the table, basically at the halfway point of the season. And then the last half of the season, it just fell apart.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe our tune will change if they go out and they win the FA Cup. But I think, by and large, who they are is what we saw over the course of these 38 games.
I can't see that happening either.
It would surprise me. But who knows? Maybe they'll rally off of this and try to prove people wrong who have been just destroying them all week. You're going to ask Burley about it, but the manager position at Chelsea, is that even a coveted job anymore?
I think it's a good job if you recognize that you're not going in to be a long-term manager. If you realize that you can go in and do something, you can win something, you have to be as resourceful as Conte was. Like, look, that championship winning season will go down in history of the Abramovich era of Chelsea as a really good one because he made do with what he had in a very unique way. Now, look, I know he had some very good players too, and N'Golo Kante came into the squad, etc. But he was able to make do, and he was able to find out a way to win and switch formations when it went wrong, like the defeat at Arsenal, the wing-backs, the kind of revitalization of some of the players in the team, Hazard coming back into form. That season is going to go down as an amazing season. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you're a manager that has an idea, has a plan for that group and can come in and work quickly, fine. But you are not there for the long term. You are merely keeping that seat warm for the next incumbent.
Yeah. So before we move off of Chelsea, looking at their yo-yo seasons, the champions 10th, champions 5th, it got me thinking. And I did a little research here. You ready? And I want you to guess. Oh. So I went back and essentially have looked at form, but not over like a few weeks or whatever, form over 5 seasons. And I took the average finish over the course of those seasons? Do you, and I'm curious if you could guess how the table would look the last five seasons, what it would be.
No.
You're not even going to guess.
So I know what you've done. You've basically compiled the last few seasons into one mega table.
I added up all the of where they all finished, and then I took the average. I divided that by five, and you get their average finish per year.
And oh, okay.
I'm curious if you could tell where those teams would rank.
No.
Play along.
All right.
What's the matter with you? This isn't that hard.
Manchester City first.
Correct. By a pretty wide margin.
Yeah, by a lot.
Their average finish is just over second.
Yeah. Spurs second.
That's right. They were.
Manchester.
I'll tell you this.
Chelsea
third.
There's
a tie between third and fourth. They had exactly the same. And then a tie between.
Chelsea and Man United in third and fourth.
Wrong. Chelsea and Arsenal.
Oh, okay.
And then Liverpool and United.
How broad was your sample size again?
The last 5 years.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yep.
Yeah.
So City, Spurs, Chelsea, Arsenal, and then Liverpool and United. Is that interesting? I don't know.
I actually did find that interesting once I knew I was going to get some of it right.
I have another trivia question for you later in the show, but I think you'll get it. Let's see. Liverpool, they took care of business. They seal up. Obviously, with Chelsea losing, they didn't have to do anything, but in what you would expect, Liverpool in some style, 4-0 over Brighton, Salah again, goal, assist. I don't know. I've kind of. You said that you're bored with all this. Him and Manchester City are two of the things that I'm most bored with, and I feel bad because those have been the two bright spots of the season.
You're not bored with him. You're bored with talk.
I don't know what
him.
To say anymore.
You still enjoy? Yeah, exactly.
This has been amazing.
People feel like they have to fill up the air with stuff. It's right. Been awesome to watch. And the way he made you feel when he goes on those slaloming runs, you know, that's what matters. And the beauty of the goals, those are the things that matter. You see, that's where the Messi comparisons come in. Because people have run out of things to say, so they look for the comparison game. And frankly, I don't care. As a converted winger, a guy who's, you know, playing in a more kind of goal-scoring responsibility position, he's been amazing. Amazing. And it's been so good to watch.
And he's done it both domestically, he's done it in Europe. It's been truly incredible.
And the range of goals he scored, the type of goal he scored, the relentlessness in attack, he's just been phenomenal.
Yeah. It just goes to show that he was always good. I think Roma fans thought he was a good player. Fiorentina, good player. I don't know what Chelsea fans would say, but I guess it just goes to show that you never know when something is going to click for someone. I don't know if it's because he's just now playing for the right manager,
yeah.
If he's surrounded, you know, if the partnership with him and Firmino and Mane, if that just works, if he just hit a certain age where now he just finally feels truly comfortable. I don't know.
But it
clearly just clicked for him.
Here's something interesting. I was talking with Michael Calley, who is the stats guy, who you can find on the interwebs, and he does a podcast, the Double Pivot podcast. And we were talking about expected goals, which is something I'm trying to get to grips with, you know. I'm trying to emerge from the Neanderthal cave that I've been inhabiting over stats.
Yeah.
And he said that Salah's expected goals from Roma to Liverpool is not that different. It's just that now he is taking those chances. That's the magic. He had a lot of chances last season for Roma, but he wasn't converting them. And what's fascinating for me, and that nobody has answered for me, how has he changed that? How has he got better? How has he got so ice cool at finishing? Like, is it more time on the training ground? Like, when Frank Lampard wanted to improve his fitness, and particularly his ability to run, he went to the running track, he put spikes on, and he practiced sprinting, being faster, being better. Can you do that as a goal scorer? Do hours on the training field equal excellence on the field?
Of course. That's the whole point of practicing and repetition.
No,
right?
But you can't recreate those moments in scoring. It's very, very difficult to do that on the training field on your own with the extra hours it takes. It's just fantastic to me, that turnaround.
Yeah, something tells me his name will be mentioned on Wednesday night. Let's see. Tottenham and Leicester finished up the year with a really exciting match. Didn't mean a whole lot. I mean, Spurs do finish above Liverpool for the season. I guess that's what it meant. But Pochettino afterwards kind of stepped out of character a little bit. And almost as soon as the game ended, spoke about how this is not good enough. And he needs more from Daniel Levy, and it's something that I think Tottenham fans have been saying, seeing how close this club has gotten, but they can't seem to get over the hump in any competition. Pochettino now wants $150 million to $200 million, somewhere in that range, to really improve this squad.
The tabloids would call it a war chest. They always call it a war chest.
Look, I will not argue with him. Since he's been in charge, they have a net spend of £50 million. The fact that they've been able to compete with some of these other clubs on that sort of budget is in itself a pretty incredible accomplishment. And Pochettino probably doesn't like the criticism that he's now receiving. When he's looking around and seeing other managers and the money that they're getting from their management and the things they're doing, he probably thinks, I could be doing the same things if I was given the same resources. So I understand why he is going into Daniel Levy's office and is going to demand this. I just hope that if the demands aren't met... Is there going to be an ultimatum? Is he going to? I certainly hope not.
I wonder if he believes the project can continue to develop, which it has over the last few years, without that big spend. Tottenham don't spend that big compared to others. It's as simple as that. Their wage bill is not that big. The net spend, as you said, isn't that big. I think he has realised, particularly with the juggernaut of Man City and the fear of what they're going to do again this summer.
Oh, God, seriously. JJ, I don't know if it's nostalgic. If it's me having seen Real Madrid recently, I kind of want Bale back.
I don't see quite how he fits into that team.
He'll fit. Don't you worry about it. I kind of want him back. Let's see. Manchester City, they leave it late, become the first club to hit the 100-point barrier ever. I really, really enjoyed seeing that because I like seeing when a team embraces kind of an artificial goal. Like they won the league. You know, there's nothing really for them to play for. They've already broken all these records. Whether or not they hit that 100-point barrier, it doesn't really change the way anyone will view them. But in their minds, that they turned that into something that they wanted to achieve. And when that goal went in, when Gabriel Jesus scored that in the 94th minute, they went wild. I mean, they mobbed him. Pep ran, sprinted down the sideline. Like, you could tell that really meant something to them. And I enjoy seeing great clubs try to really exert their greatness and try to become not just some other great club, but try to be one that history will remember. And it looks like this team really embraced that idea.
I think that's Guardiola's raison d'etre. He sets out to do those kind of things and to win as much as he can. And I think, I don't know how much I necessarily believe in it, but there was an article about how Spurs needed to finish strong this season so it doesn't bleed into next season. And I'm not sure quite how that works. I haven't really, you know, settled on an opinion on that. But I'm sure Guardiola said, we don't want to look back in pre-season on a bad finish where we won the title, but we're just crawling over the line at the end. Goal setting seems to be a huge part of what he does, like the next goal, the next thing we want to do, on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. Even the way he talks about games. You know, the way we were so kind of impressed about the team he put out away to Bristol in the league, in the Carabao Cup. Right. Yeah, like that was a really strong team with important games on the horizon. He didn't care. And I think that's what drives him on, and I think he transmits that to the players. And that's a great sign for them going forward. It really is.
Yeah, definitely. Let's see. Arsene Wenger says goodbye to English football. Planes circling overhead that don't read Wenger out. They were actually complimentary and thankful of him. Shocking.
It's nuts. I'm glad that someone has...
He even joked about that afterwards. He acknowledged
you
that.
You know you're on your way out when the plane signs are good.
Yeah. Right. Right. Look, we've beaten the Wenger stuff to death.
Oh, no, we did. Don't say that. We did a lovely podcast on him, a beautiful tribute
to
him.
I'm saying we've been talking about this for 2 years.
So, I've got new thoughts.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're not my thoughts, but they were an interesting take on his the legacy issue, which is what always comes up.
Yeah.
And Ken Early kind of believes that he may have left them in the same position they were in. Because he points out quite rightly, we talk about the way he revolutionised Arsenal. Now, I'm not saying it was a good season they had or season and a half or whatever they had under Bruce Rioch. I'm not saying that. But it's not like they hadn't won the league under George Graham in that successful period. They'd won it twice, 89 and 91. It's not like they hadn't won in Europe. They had. They'd won the Cup Winners' Cup and been in UEFA Cup finals. They were a force. And his kind of thesis was, this was a good club where a manager came in and changed elements of it and made it really good similar to what George Graham did, though, in the 80s when he took over, and that maybe they're just back to where they started again.
Wow.
Well, it's not
so you're saying Wenger didn't do anything other than just keep them at a level that they were already at?
No, he did.
Wow,
he
there
did,
you go, everybody.
No. He did exceptional things just like George Graham, but we can't look at them just in a vacuum. It's on a continuum of Arsenal.
Yeah. Well, look, their style of play became synonymous with being like the most enjoyable to watch England.
I will say that. The way they played the game, you couldn't compare that to George Graham.
And you can't say that they were just, you know, George Graham won a couple titles, Wenger won a few titles. Not only did they may have what will be remembered as the greatest team that the league will ever see,
the
Invincibles.
Right, when you dig into the stylistics of it, you wouldn't dare compare a George Graham title-winning team where the 1-0 to the Arsenal became the chant, and the boring, boring Arsenal, where did that come from? George Graham. You could not, you know, throw that at Wenger. He played some of the most attractive football, even when they weren't winning in the latter years. There was times when you'd watch them and you're like, God, if they had a center mid or a center half.
We're going to be tight on time. I already know it, but I just want to ask you one thing. And if you answer in one word, that's fine. I don't even need a lengthy explanation. Arsenal, are they on the ascent, the descent, or are they stagnant where they are?
Ascent.
Wow. Let's see. Barcelona, their unbeaten run comes to a shocking end against Levante, of all clubs. Here's how shocking it was. Barcelona hadn't conceded 5 goals against anyone since 2003. And it was also Levante's first league win against Barcelona since 1964. You were just 3 years old then. Valverde sat Leo Messi for this one, which is really what's making headlines. But look, is that why Barcelona lost? They scored 4 goals. Shouldn't that typically be enough? Now, you could
it
was 5-1 at one point. Levante were up. So if Messi's playing, there's a good chance that Barcelona are never in that position in the first place. But when Barcelona scores 4, it's hard for me to look at that as the reason that they lose.
If I said to you, if you asked me how the Barcelona game go, and I said Felipe Coutinho got a hat-trick, you'd be, oh.
Oh my God, they won 9-2.
Yeah, weird one. One of those end-of-season ones, Andrew, when everything's wrapped up and clearly the minds are not on the job. They can't be.
And it's so kind of flies in the face of what we're just talking about with Pep and City setting artificial goals. I'm sure Barcelona, like, they have won this league and they're going to do so in really one. If they only lose one game this year, that's a tremendous season
they'll
be coming off of. But you could tell afterwards, they were really mad that they lost this game. I felt like in some ways, like this was a thing that they were really, really going for, much the way City did with 100 points. And coming up short, it looks like it really did sting them.
It's true. And also, it's not like they were complacent. Like, they got Sevilla in the Copa del Rey and they battered them. You know, they have been focused. They have been able to show focus even after they went out to Roma in the league. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Or in the Champions League, sorry.
And then finally it does happen. Juventus seal the deal. They win the Serie A for the 7th consecutive season. It's their 34th league title. The next closest are the Milan clubs with just 18. Almost double for Juve than what AC Milan and Inter Milan have. And here's your trivia question, JJ. With this title, Juve ties blank for the most consecutive league titles among Europe's top 5 leagues.
Ties blank.
Yeah, who also has won 7 straight titles in among Europe's top 5 leagues. Happened somewhat recently.
Bayern Munich.
No, they currently have 6.
Oh, PSG?
No, but you're in the right country.
Marseille?
No.
Monaco?
No.
Oh, go on, tell me.
Lyon.
Oh.
From, what was it, 01 to 08, I think?
You know,
they won 7
that's
straight.
A period of dominance that has just gone over my head.
Yeah.
That was the time when they were constantly making the Champions League quarterfinals.
Or semis, yeah.
And then would hemorrhage players.
Michael Essien, you're
yeah,
right.
They yeah, yeah, Benzema. God.
Yeah. Yep. So there you go. How about that? Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, that's pretty much, I don't know what's left for us to say, so let's talk to somebody who always has more to say, and that is one of our favorite people to speak with, Craig Burley of ESPN FC, back on the show to put a bow on the season. Craig, what's up, man? How are you?
Good evening, boys. I watched the Grand Prix. That's how bad it was. I mean, I'm a bit of a petrol head. I mean, I'm a bit of an anorak. I watch Formula 1, but I watched the Formula 1 on Saturday morning because I knew Liverpool were going to probably beat Brighton, or they only needed a draw. And I didn't think it mattered what Chelsea did, although they were rotten. So, I didn't bother because it was a bit of a foregone conclusion, wasn't it?
Good for you. It was hard to avoid. I mean, it was on the Sci-Fi Channel, it was on Bravo, it was everywhere on TV.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I mean, I had no qualms with that. It's a difficult situation, isn't it, when you've got a product and And it's just sort of, you know, it's sort of faltering at the end because Man City have been so good. And that's been a great story. The top four was kind of set. I know Liverpool got a little touchy in the end, particularly with the results against Stoke and then the result at Chelsea and then the injuries and the number two issues that Jurgen Klopp had and him not being at the club. And he got a little touchy about it, but then Brighton was safe. And Liverpool were at home, and we know how good they could be when they're at home and when they're attacking. So it's always difficult. You try to market it, you try and make it the most exciting it can be, but it is always difficult. And but I think, to be honest, boys, I think the best teams got in the top four anyway. I think it filtered out in probably about the right way. And of course, for Liverpool, it all ends with the swan song and the showcase game, which is really unthinkable from 3 or 4 months ago. So it's a great position to be in.
So, Craig, I'm listening to Paul Merson today on Sky. Yeah. And Merce said he doesn't want a title race next season. He wants Manchester City to be dominant, to win by 20 points because he wants to see greatness in the league. And my reaction to that was, I don't want that. And then I read a piece in some soccer magazine today that is saying why the Premier League needs to have the relegation playoff, meaning there's a playoff between the Championship team and the Premier League team for, I suppose, that last spot to create excitement. Is that idea grabbing your interest or no?
I wouldn't be against it. I mean, I know I think they have it in Germany, and I think it's Wolfsburg that are in it. Certainly from the Bundesliga point of view, they finished third from bottom, so I think they go into a playoff. I'm not exactly sure who the team is. So I haven't got any issues generally with stuff like that. I think there's some potential good ideas about. As for not having a title race and just seeing I don't think I've heard as much nonsense in all my life. We want Liverpool to be strong in the Champions League final. We know they're bringing in Keita from Germany. I was talking to Stevie Nicol about it. We were talking about it before we went on air tonight about what Klopp and Liverpool might do. They're going to go for a goalkeeper, surely. They might go for another centre-half. There's been talk about Fekir coming in from Lyon. So they could have a couple of hundred million to spend, and Stevie reckons they've got money in the bank. United will spend. They will absolutely spend. City will spend and try and go again. But it is important that the chasing teams absolutely make a charge for Man City and try and make it as competitive as possible, because the money's drying up a bit at Chelsea. We know there's some big issues for Arsenal, changing the manager, but there's some real squad issues there. And we know Maurizio Pochettino is fighting what could be a losing battle, trying to get the dollars out of Daniel Levy's pocket. Now, they've got a big meeting, I think, this week, guys. And there's been reports today or tonight in one of the English papers, and I think it's just a bit messing around, that Pochettino has been chased by Chelsea to be the next boss.
Ooh.
Now, Andrew...
Oh, my God.
I suggest this is a plant, bearing in mind Pochettino is meeting Levy in a couple of days, and this story all of a sudden floats around, and he wants 150 to 200 million to spend, and he wants all the big players put on big wages to make sure they're staying. So there's lots of subplots about what might happen for next year, but absolutely, we have to have a competitive Premier League. Otherwise, it loses its interest.
It sounds like what you're both saying, which you won't say because you're both traditionalists, so I'll say it, is that you wouldn't mind seeing like an American-style postseason.
No, none of us said that. We want to...
You're dancing around in it, but you don't have the courage.
We want an old-fashioned title race, okay?
Where did this come from? I've got nothing against Man City doing what they're doing. I mean, we can maybe have... You know, there'll be people who could write a report on their spending and how that... And I don't get too much into that, to be honest with you. But I absolutely love what they're doing and how they're playing it, but it is up to the rest to try and peg and close that gap. So that's what you want in a competitive league. You've got the problems that I've had in the Scottish League for quite a while now, And it's not Celtic's doing, but Celtic have absolutely run away with the Scottish title. And it becomes difficult. And I don't think we'll get in that situation with Man City, because I think there are other clubs with relative spending power. But I certainly hope we don't, because, you know, you do need to have a title race with arguably a fresh winner every couple of years.
Craig, as a Chelsea old boy, I'm going to put this to you. Or not old boy, but a former Chelsea player. That sounds much kinder. Past few seasons, they've been on this bizarre seesaw. Champions, 10th. Champions, 5th. Now, Andrew posed this question to me off here, and I can't get my head around quite why it's been like that. Have you any ideas as to why they've been so up and down over the last few seasons in particular?
Well, this is not as easy a sell for a managerial job as it once was. If we push ahead a little bit and you know, all right, well, let's just say Antonio Conte's gone. And I think we're probably all in that same boat. That's probably what's going to happen. I don't think he's tried to paint the picture any differently. But both occasions recently, the manager has got into a fight. You know, Mourinho in the second season, he got into the fight with his medical department. It became a legal issue. He got in a fight with the board. Ultimately, they sacked him. Go back to pre-season, at the start of this season, and it was a reported fact from the UK that there was a heated meeting between Abramovich's lieutenants and Antonio Conte, and he did not like what he heard in terms of who he was getting, how much he was getting to spend. And that became very fractured. So in two occasions, the championship manager went into the new season pretty much with a negative attitude, fighting with the board, didn't get the players he wanted, lost players, didn't replace Diego Costa, Morata was poor. David Luiz went out of the team, Gary Cahill went out of the team. Says Fabregas was a year on. Bakayoko didn't perform to the standards he was performing for Monaco. So when you put all these in the boiling pot, and the problems and the negativity surrounding the manager, I think you can see on both occasions why it was more fractured the second season. Now, I don't see that changing for anybody that comes in. There's never been, in the Abramovich era, a long-term strategy for the manager at Chelsea. It's been get in, do a couple of years, maybe three, and get out. But they're not going to spend the big bucks anymore. He's been rolling it back for maybe 3 or 4 years now, at least. If you look at the net spend, they've got a big stadium they're going to build. Hazard might go. Courtois might go. What's Morata going to do? And can he eventually cut the mustard? Giroud's on a short-term contract. Fabregas is coming in towards the end of his career. There's been talk about Kante going to PSG. And on top of that, there's no manager. And there's not exactly a plethora out there, because Pep's at Man City, Mourinho's at Man United, and Klopp's at Liverpool. And Allegri doesn't look like he's going to leave Juventus. So do you just go for the retread again? And is it Ancelotti coming back in? And this can he talk? So I think there's a lot of problems, JJ, at Chelsea, in terms of... At one point, if Liverpool, United and City were in for a player in Arsenal, Abramovich should get the checkbook out and say, how much are they bidding? 75 million? We'll bid 90. We'll blow them out of the water. They did it with Willian when he was going to Tottenham. They've done it with other players. They're not doing that anymore. They're not the big spending boys that they once were. There are others, and I include Liverpool in that, who are prepared to spend 75 million on a centre-half. There are others out there who are prepared to spend. And Chelsea at the moment don't seem to be in that fight.
Craig, I feel like we know all the big stories from the air, and we've covered them to death, like Man City's dominance and Mo Salah, Wenger. But I'm curious, let's go deeper. Was there like a less mainstream story in the league this year that kind of captured your attention that maybe didn't get the sort of coverage that all these other things did?
Well, I thought Benitez did a great job at Newcastle, and they were trying to sell the club in January because... they get the big bucks for it then, in case they get relegated, and that was the big problem. He kept them up. You look at Hodgson's 7 straight defeats, hadn't scored the goal at Crystal Palace. He goes in there off the back of his England debacle. He's organised, he's knowledgeable, he's experienced. And they had some good players. They did have some good players. but they had a horrendous injury list as well around, I think, February time. There was about a dozen you would consider first team or squad regulars were all out injured, and including Wilfried Zaha. So I thought he did a great job. And of course, Sean Dyche at Burnley, nobody expected him to be in Europe, and they are. So there were some nice subplots from managers. And I suppose in one way, David Moyes did a good job at West Ham as well, keeping West Ham out of trouble. He wasn't the choice of most people. And that seems to be the flavour of the month these days. As we're talking now, Sam Allardyce is still in a job, but I'm hearing it'll be 48 hours' time he won't be in a job. And it just seems to me at the moment that the type of football some of the other teams are playing, that all the kind of mid-table-ish teams want to have a piece of that. And a lot of these managers, it's not what they've been about. And I think that's where we're going to see a change. We'll probably see a change at West Ham. We'll probably see a change at Everton. And there might be one or two other clubs. But I didn't expect West Brom to go. I didn't expect Stoke City to go. Who was the other team, boys? Because I've Swansea. Yeah. I thought Swansea might go, actually. They were the only ones I did think might go. But I did not think West Brom and Stoke City, two established Premier League teams, would be relegated. So there were some interesting subplots out there, and some managers down the lower end that I mentioned did particularly well.
Yeah, you mentioned Newcastle there. This isn't really a Premier League question, but I suppose it kind of is. Can you make a good argument why Jonjo Shelvey shouldn't be on the plane for England?
Do you know, somebody texted me this earlier on the way home from work tonight, and I thought, I've not really given it any thought. I've kind of been on the periphery. I've seen people talking about it and some tweets back in England, and I haven't seen enough in Newcastle this year because, as you know, guys, we sort of, rightly or wrongly, because we cover so many leagues, we can stick to the more top teams because we're so short in time. But I haven't watched him over the piece. He's a talent for sure. He's loose cannon. There's not a doubt about it. But I think what I'd have to do, I'd have to look at the rest of the people that are going to be in that position. And if we're looking at the Jack Wilshers of this world, I don't get that.
Right.
I don't. At one point, I thought Jack. At one point, I was a huge admirer of Jack Wilshere. I just think Jack Wilshere's lost his way, but he seems to be a name that keeps being pushed forward for England. You got Jordan Henderson, who clearly is going to go, and there'll be a couple of others. I'm just not sure. I think when you go to a World Cup, and this sounds strange coming from somebody that was sent off in the World Cup. as a manager's always generally looking for somebody who, one, that can do the job, and two, that they can trust. And I think he's had quite a few scrapes at disciplinary, and I think that might be one thing that would err Gareth Southgate away from selecting him. But I think he's absolutely in the mix, for sure.
Craig, last week on the show, JJ and I debated something that sounds like a simple question, but it kind of spiraled, and I don't think there's a simple answer. So I'll ask you, Manchester United, and let's put their upcoming FA Cup this weekend aside, was this a good season or a bad season for them?
Which I think they'll win, by the way, because I don't see how... I think Chelsea have been so inconsistent. They're such a big club, and they've got such a big following, and as you boys are probably well aware, there's lots of Man United fans get very upset when you talk about them. But they are a difficult conundrum to work out, because sometimes they do some good things, and other times they're unwatchable. I mean, they're unwatchable. So I think ultimately I would have to say it's been a good season for them. I mean, if finishing... They're not ready to be finishing with 100 points, right? Or 99, but whatever it was. They're not... No other side of England is ready to be doing that. So if we're gauging everything by Man City, then you've had a poor season. But I think clearly at the moment they're head and shoulders. I think where it gets sort of diluted with United is because of the style of the play. We can talk about a good season for Liverpool because they play generally great football. We can talk about a good or decent season for Tottenham, although they had a bad FA Cup semi-final and had a bad Champions League outing to Juventus, but they play good football. They've been entertaining. I think it's the one issue that keeps raising its head about United is they've been solid, but are they getting enough buck for what they should be? And I think that is the difficult balance that that United fans and the board are going to have to ultimately come down to in the end. And they did spend a lot of money, and they'll probably spend again, which is going to increase the pressure. But they don't pay money to finish second to Man City over the long term, over a season or so, yeah. But over a peak period of 3 or 4 years, they're not going to be giving Alexis Sanchez crazy money and spending $150 million in the transfer window on players, which I'm sure they will, to finish second to Man City. So the pressure's going to be absolutely bang on next season.
Craig, before we let you go, we haven't had a chance to talk about this, but I think you're well positioned, knowing as you do Scottish football and Glasgow in particular. But Steven Gerrard to Rangers, your thoughts? What is he letting himself in for? Is this a good move? Have you been surprised by the reaction at all?
No, not surprised, JJ. And you know, first and foremost, it's the I don't get the Steven Gerrard can go to Scotland and cut his teeth and then he can move on somewhere else. It's absolute nonsense because, as you know, it's a bear pit up there. I mean, it really is, and the pressure will be on. It is an absolutely great opportunity for him. Unfortunately, he's going into a bit of a nutcase job behind the scenes. It's quite fractured, the board, and how much money is actually there to spend for him remains to be seen, with Dave King, the owner, having his own issues. What I would say, it's absolutely raises the profile again. The eyes, it's never a bad thing if somebody of his stature pitches up, whether he's got managerial experience or not, because it brings eyes and ears and words and cameras and stories to Scottish football. And that's never a bad thing. It drums interest, lots of interest. People want to know how he's doing. Can he catch Brendan Rodgers at Celtic? Can he cut the mustard in management? Is there money there to spend? It brings eyes and ears to Scottish football. And whilst there's not been a title race, that can only be good. That can only be good. It's good publicity for Scottish football, but it's a big opportunity for him, but it is a difficult opportunity because, as you know, Celtic are a tidy side. They're well organised. They're way ahead in terms of the football they play. Their finances are better. They've got more money to spend. They're in the Champions League. So that's going to be difficult for him. If he gets the backing, he'll get half a chance. But it's going to be one that makes people who maybe didn't have much interest take a look and say, oh, I wonder how Steven Gerrard's got on at Rangers. And listen, if he overturns Celtic, which is going to be really, really difficult, then he's going to have some feather in his cap, because there's many have tried over the last few years since they hit the financial problems and they've failed miserably. So if he pulls that off, he is putting himself in the line for a top job somewhere.
Craig, good stuff, man. So what happens now that the season's over? Are you like, do you switch into World Cup mode? Or, well, I guess we still have FA Cup and Champions League final and stuff, so there is still some club football to talk about. But are you like psyched now for the World Cup?
Well, I'm going to buy a magazine and get to know all these players that are playing for countries that we don't normally watch in the World Cup. Do a bit of homework. After, I'm going back to the UK for a couple of weeks, so take some break at the end of May. The FC show will obviously be continuing because it doesn't revolve around me. But Nicol's going on to a wedding. I'm going away as well, so we're leaving some of the boys behind to hold the fort. The show will go on, as you know, regardless. They'll cover that. I'll watch the Champions League from some small town Yorkshire bar on the East Coast. I'll be watching Liverpool and as much football as I can whilst just relaxing ahead of the World Cup. And then we kick on for a full month at the World Cup. We've got Steve McManaman coming over to join us. Mm. Stuart Robson's coming over for a bit. We'll have a full house on the show, and we'll just try and cover the World Cup as best we can. Obviously, Fox have got the rights to it. We do what we can, and we sit back and enjoy. There's no rest for the wicked boys. A couple of weeks off, and then back at it.
And a nostalgic summer, really, for you, Craig Burley. 20 years since you stopped Rangers getting the 10 in a row. 20 years since you were Scottish Football Writers Player of the Year. 20 years since you scored that goal against Norway, was it, in France 98. 20 years since Scotland qualified for a World Cup.
My God, it makes you feel old, doesn't it?
I know.
Well, they're actually having and I did see a tweet about that there. The 10 in a row thing was big for the boys. It was big for the club. It was great to be part of that. I was absolutely delighted. I wouldn't change it for the world, being part of that squad, with the great camaraderie and players we had. But it's interesting, they're having a reunion for the Scotland team that played Brazil and played in that World Cup, which you mentioned was the last one that we reached. They're having a reunion for that in early June with a golf day and a gala dinner. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to attend because I don't live around the corner now in England, but they are having some sort of weekend for that, which I presume will involve lots of alcohol, as usual. So it's probably best that I stay away, boys. But it is nice to look back and to see all the old boys. But unfortunately, with me living here in the States, with you boys now, you're stuck with me over here.
That's right. Actually, you know what else was 20 years ago today, actually?
What was that?
The final episode of Seinfeld.
No way.
Yeah, 20 years today.
Was it?
That's right. Are you a Seinfeld guy, Craig? Did you...
I'm not really.
Oh,
I'm not really. I'm more an Only Fools and Horses guy now. But anybody listening to this podcast probably going, what the hell's Only Fools and Horses? Look it up on YouTube.
It's worth a look.
Well, good stuff. Hey, thanks as always, man, and we'll catch up soon.
All right, boys. Take care.
Our thanks to Craig. Yeah, 20 years since Seinfeld. Do you have a favorite episode? I can never remember if you're a Seinfeld guy.
I'm not really a Seinfeld guy. I guess the Soup Nazi one.
Yeah, it's a classic. I'd say the Merv Griffin show, for those listening, I love. The Contest, obviously, is a classic. Yeah.
You're a big guy for Seinfeld. So
favorite show of all time.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't think anything will catch it. Office is probably, American Office is probably my number two.
You need to watch the UK Office.
I know. I've seen a couple, and I love it. There's only a few, right? It's
two seasons, yeah. Christmas special. Done.
Whenever I watch, the ones I've seen, it's awesome.
It is great.
Yeah, got to watch it. Mailbag.
At CEOSoccerPod, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. We're going to start off with Yannick Swartz, who is the man with the most professional footballer name ever. Yannick Swartz. If I told you he was playing up front for Real Betis, you'd believe me. As you well know, Marseille was taken over by Frank McCourt in October 2017. Not even a year later, they are facing Atletico Madrid in the Europa League final on Wednesday, and they'll fight for second, third, or fourth spot in the league on Sunday. Come what may, of these two key dates, almost every single OM fan out there would agree that this season has been a success and could still be a triumph. As the only French team to ever win the Champions League in 1993, a team on the upswing and one of the best fan bases in Europe, I believe Marseille deserves more attention in the media and on your pod as well. I'm happy to talk about Marseille, Andrew, because when I was a young boy, around 10, they were actually really, really good. And they had players like Marcel Desailly, Barthez, Jean-Pierre Papin, Abide Pelé. They were actually really, really good. And they were a regular competing in the old European Cup. And they won it in 93. They beat Milan in the final. But I've got a piece of audio from someone you should know. This is Chris Waddle playing in a famous game in the 91 quarterfinal against AC Milan, where he goes on this amazing run. And something happens. Barry Davis on the commentary.
Half the floodlights have gone out. Absolute chaos at the finish of the contest. Waddle doesn't need light for inspiration. What a run by Waddle! This is a brilliant goal. He's so unlucky.
I think he actually says this is a brilliant goal. Oh, he's so unlucky.
He gets kind of taken down.
It gets taken down. That was March 20th, 1991. Defending champions Milan forfeited their European Cup quarterfinal against Marseille when they refused to play the last 2 minutes. Just as Waddle is running there, half the floodlights go out. They come off the field. They have to play the final few minutes. Milan refused to, and they're thrown out. Marseille go on to play Red Star Belgrade in the 91 final, and they lost on penalties, but they lifted the trophy in 93. So very best of luck to them on Wednesday. Greg Peterson, which is the most American next door neighbor.
Sounds like a fake name. Is this even a real email?
Greg Peterson, I put captioned it as the most American next door neighbor sounding name ever. Like your mortal enemy. Oh, Peterson. First, I just want to say I love the pod and listen every week during lunch. And since it's been a recent topic of conversation, I do always listen to the end, no matter if it's under an hour or longer.
I want to know where he works because he's taking a long lunch. And I need to let his boss know.
I prefer the longer pause because that means more content and more bickering. Also sad the U.S. isn't...
And less work.
Also sad the U.S. isn't in the World Cup, but will likely be cheering for certain players such as KDB, Kevin De Bruyne, and Messi. Anyways, my question is about the International Champions Cup this summer. My dad and some friends and I are looking to go to the Man City-Dortmund game in Chicago. We are all huge Man City fans and would love to see them live. Plus, we'd love to see Pulisic. However, I am worried about paying all that money and travelling. I'm from Ohio. And then not seeing any of the stars we love. In the past, the ICC usually has some of the big names, but not all. However, this summer is different because they will be playing in the World Cup, which ends the week before the ICC. Just curious if you have any insight about the rosters and if it'll be worth the travel and money. Apps, how could we have any insight?
No insight whatsoever on the rosters.
We can't tell that. We don't know how things are going to shake out in the World Cup. Any thoughts? I think you should do it, man. You have to do it. It's your team.
I mean, Manchester City versus Borussia Dortmund, like you say, you'll see Pulisic and you're going to see the Premier League champs.
I think,
and it's in Chicago. Like, that's an awesome city to maybe make kind of, it's on a Friday, make a long weekend out of it. Yeah.
I think you do it. You just do it anyway. You're going to see your team regardless of who's playing. Ryan Sneller. First off, this will make Andrew uncomfortable. I'm all for that. But I am a huge fan of the pod. Living in California, my friends unfortunately don't watch or discuss soccer. What? People in California like soccer?
The games are on very early, JJ. It's hard.
As much as I do, so listening to you banter back and forth is an amazing treat. Please keep up the good work. We will try. I'm a San Jose Earthquake supporter and season ticket holder with my wife. The start of the season has been killing us. I would have thought you go to the football to get away from your wife. I was so optimistic with our new coach and some of our new signings, but sadly neither have really stepped up. My question is a two-parter. What can the Earthquakes do to turn around this season, or are we too far gone? Question two, is it time to cut ties with Wando?
Ooh.
Thank you for reading. I'm looking forward to your response. P.S. Can't wait for the Divundlings.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's what I would say. Yes, it has been a very frustrating start to the season for San Jose. But here's the thing, and maybe this has only made it more frustrating, or maybe this actually is reason for optimism. They've got five losses, all of which have been by one goal.
They're in every game.
You know, late ones, too. Mike Grella with a late goal. Diego Valeri in a 1-0 loss to Portland in the 88th minute. So, you know, if you're getting blown out week after week, then I'd say, yeah, this is something's going to have to change here. But I don't know. To me, I feel like this will correct itself at some point.
Right, I think so too. And I'm going on the rosters. He said he wasn't happy with the signing. Danny Housen has four goals in nine games. Magnus Eriksson was on the score sheet of the weekend in your first away win at Minnesota. You've got players like Godoy, Kizashvili. I don't think the season is over by any stretch.
No. Oh my God, they're 5 points out of a playoff spot. It's MLS.
Come on.
Everyone gets in.
Calm down. Justin in North Carolina. My all-time favorite red card was JJ's rant on Paolo Maldini's professional tennis career. Quotes, just retire already. That's a good one.
Oh, that's right. It was your bogus red card.
Yeah.
Because you were...
I listed all the amazing things this guy has done and he just wouldn't retire. Guy's pushing 50.
Such a fraud you are.
Marion. With Borussia Dortmund backing into the Champions League this past weekend and looking like a hot mess the second half of the season, is this still a good place for Pulisic? Isn't there someplace better for him? And I'll say it, Liverpool. Wink. Daniel Williams. Best man of the match segment I've heard was the Millwall fan stopping the salt in the bar. Yeah, remember that?
Oh, yes. That was a very good one.
Millwall. Adit Ayagoyal. So Tuchel from BVB to PSG after rejecting two English mid-table clubs. In charge of Neymar, Cavani, Kylian Mbappe. UEFA Champions League Challenge 2019 is established. That's the news of Thomas Tuchel, who has taken over officially at PSG today. I think that is a fair comment.
Yep.
Paul Almazan. Atsio Soccer Pod. Did Andrew Gundling predict Kane's two goals in the last pod? Well done. Did you predict them?
I don't know that I did, but I think I just made a mention of, like, if he scores a couple. I don't know if I ever actually said Kane's going to get two this weekend, but hey, I'll take it.
What about the winner? Good Lord.
Oh, that was a really nice
goal.
That was
a beaut. Absolute beaut.
It was a fun game, man.
And finally, Simon Knowles at Knowlesley. One of the best podcasts I've heard today. That sounds...
Like on that day?
No, that's what he wrote. I don't think this is good. He was referring to last week's Transcontinental podcast.
Okay.
The bromance is stronger than ever, it appears, between you both. JJ, thanks for the Netflix recommendation on Bobby Kennedy.
Oh. Wait, when did you recommend it?
I recommended it on the podcast last week.
Oh. Huh.
Did you?
I guess maybe you were... Yeah, maybe that was... Yeah, well, I started watching it too, and it's amazing.
It's really, really good.
Yeah.
And I can't believe all the new footage. And
no, it's excellent.
It really is.
I'm only one in, but yeah, good call by you.
Yep.
At CO Soccer Pod on Twitter, and caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. We're going to fly through what to watch for. You
okay.
Because forget it. It's over. We're over an hour.
I actually don't care. People enjoy it over an hour. Let's just...
Everyone set your speeds to times three. We'll both sound like chipmunks, but it's worth it. You'll get through this.
Oh, you're such a maniac.
All right. Hey, the championship playoffs, the second leg. Fulham through to the final, and Americans everywhere rejoice. This is our World Cup, people. All right?
Full Americana.
Yeah. This is our World Cup. Coming into today, Fulham were unbeaten at home over their previous 15 league matches. You can now make that 16. They haven't lost at home since October 31st when they lost to Bristol City. And today it was Sessegnon getting the first goal and assisting on the winner.
The header, which was a superb header by the Odai.
Yeah. And what a great pitch invasion at the end, too. Fans just went absolutely wild.
By the way, they haven't been in Wembley since 1975 when they lost to West Ham.
No, they're also not through yet.
Down. Like, seriously.
Yeah.
But I will say this. They were so much better than the first leg where they were limp. And by the way, we need to give props to Cameron Jerome for one of the best headed goals you'll ever see.
Used to make fun of him for having awful misses.
Oh, my God. I know. But it was a brilliant header. But sadly, it counted for nothing.
Yep. Well, I don't know if it counted for nothing.
It did count for...
They ended up losing.
Well, it counts for nothing when you go out.
And then tomorrow at 2:45, we'll find out who the United States of Fulham will face in the final as Aston Villa take on Middlesbrough, with Villa holding a 1-0 advantage after Mile Jedinak scored in the first leg. Had just one goal in 25 games during the season, but it's not about how many you score. It's when you score them.
And especially Tony Pulis' team. They were at home, Andrew. I watched both championships games because it was back in the homeland.
Yeah.
Just so poor.
Steve Bruce, by the way, he had some really interesting things to say about John Terry. Bruce, he went in on the previous Aston Villa regimes, basically, and
talked
about this culture of losing and a toxic dressing room. And he said John Terry came in, and people, you know, may only see what he did on the field, but Steve Bruce talked about how he completely changed the entire culture of the locker room.
And I crushed him for when earlier in the season he had a serious injury. And like the day after it was announced he broke his leg or something, he ended up on the beach in Qatar posing for some kind of advert. I crushed him for that.
Yeah.
But he got back really quickly.
Steve Bruce said, "You've seen him out there. He was brilliant, but it wasn't just on the pitch that I needed him. It was to deal with the dressing room, and it has been toxic at Aston Villa for years. It was important people like Jack Grealish saw someone, and this is how you do it. This is the way you look after yourself. This is what you prepare for. It's all right, a manager bleeding at them, but when you hear it, a top pro, Glenn Whelan's the same. El Mohammadi's the same. Jedinak's the same. All people who have been at the top level. They've been crucial to the young ones because we have some good young ones, too." So, and he goes on and on, just praising John Terry. And somewhere, Wayne Bridge is just rolling his eyes and screaming.
Steady. I'll tell you something, though. They are old. They are experienced.
Yeah.
Like, some of the names that were listed there, like Glenn Whelan, John Terry, you know, I mean...
He goes on, "It's been cultural change. They understand what is needed. Now, look at Jack. By the time he was 21, he's had 7 managers all telling him different S-word. It's important he has stability and a focus to achieve..." Yeah, the whole thing. It's all changing for Villa, so we'll see what happens against Borough.
Well, definitely Jack Grealish's career is back on track.
Yeah. Europa League final, Wednesday, 2:45, Atletico Madrid and Marseille, which you touched on a little bit. Atletico going for their third Europa League title. Remember, they defeated our Fulham back in 2012. And Marseille battling history, as no French club has won the UEFA Cup / Europa League.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to start this time. It's not that I don't enjoy watching Marseille. They're very good, and Payet on his day can create so many chances for that team. But, Andrew, they leak goals.
Because this could be Griezmann's last game for Atletico Madrid. Lots of rumors swirling about that Barcelona.
He's going to Barca. It's done, even.
Well, come on. Have you learned nothing? How many things have we said like that have just proven to be wrong?
How many pictures have shown up of...
I haven't seen a picture of him.
Prospective Barcelona targets.
Bundesliga promotion relegation playoff. The first leg, Thursday, 2:30, Wolfsburg and Holstein Kiel.
Which sounds like a beer you'd buy at Zumschneider in New York.
FA Cup. Oh, yeah. Saturday, 12:15, Chelsea and Manchester United. Can Chelsea, like... Is this season salvageable?
Conte has to do some of his greatest managerial work now in the lead up to this.
We're going to learn something about these players.
We are going to learn something about them. And the trite nonsense of, oh, they'll be up for it. How can they not be up for a cup final? I'm telling you, they have been so resigned since the whistle blew against Huddersfield last week. Conte's got to get in there and say, listen, you're not doing it for me. You're doing it for yourselves. One last big push. Let's come on. But I can't see it.
Well, we will have reaction to that, of course, next week. And the German DFB Pokal, also Saturday at 2 o'clock, Bayern Munich and Eintracht Frankfurt. It's Bayern, maybe a little weird season for them. They win the league, which has become old hat. They don't go as far in the Champions League as they might have liked. This is a chance, though, for them to take a double. I saw Iron Robin really annoyed that the Bundesliga doesn't celebrate the title until the final day of the season. And he said it really muted our celebration. He said winning a title should be a spontaneous act of joy. And here it is. We don't get the trophy till the end of the year. We've got to pretend to be happy all over again. I kind of get where he's coming from.
I know what he's saying. You got to get it when you win it. Otherwise, yeah. You'd kill the feeling. Also, yeah. I've heard that Anastasia is going to play another concert on the field at halftime.
I can't wait for that.
Red card.
You go first.
Oh, wow. Currently going viral on soccer social media from today, fresh off the football field. Zbigniew Proski, the referee who looked after Ireland's Euro under-17 championship quarterfinal game against Holland today in Chesterfield, England. Game was tied 1-1 after regular time and so went straight to penalty kicks. All players were successful with their penalties for the Dutch. The Irish had missed one. And the Dutch were about to step up to win it until Jimmy Corcoran kept out Deshaun Redden of Chelsea. And that was the fifth penalty for the Dutch. But something happened.
Can Corcoran keep Ireland alive? Yes, he can! What a save!
Never any doubt.
The umpire, Jimmy. Jimmy saving penalties.
Did he move too soon?
I don't care. Get over.
In anybody's language.
He's not making him take it again,
he's
is he?
He's making him take it
no.
again.
No, and he's giving him a yellow. Oh, no.
He can't give him a yellow.
Well, he sent him off. What's he doing?
Well, I have...
What is he doing?
I have never seen a referee send off a player for coming off the line as a goalkeeper in a penalty shootout. Why has he yellow carded him? He was already carded, of course.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, I know.
Trying and wasting. This is sensational.
The penalty was then converted and Ireland lost.
Yeah, and also the rules also state that the goalkeeper can only be replaced by a player that has finished the game. So Oisin McEntee had to take the jersey off a distraught Corcoran.
Corcoran was in tears. His teammate had to come over and lift him up. It was really hard to watch.
Now, it's the rules. But here's the thing. Here's my take on it. They're 16 years of age, first of all. And you have to keep that in mind. I'm not saying you don't enforce the rule, but the referee warned the Dutch goalkeeper that he was moving too early. He needs to warn, make it explicit to the Irish goalkeeper, who was already on a yellow for time-wasting in regular time. Now, I've seen two replays as well. The Dutch goalkeeper was moving just as much.
That's why I hate this. Because this discretion of the ref, it happens on every penalty. This decision of when to call it and when not to call it. I mean, to choose this moment to finally decide to make that call when every keeper is doing this on every penalty. Man, I hate when refs make it about himself, and this feels a little bit like the ref making it about himself.
It really does. And in a massive game for those guys. Huge game.
Yeah,
and
Now,
Martin O'Neill burst onto the pitch. Martin O'Neill is not the manager, but he burst onto the field and confronted the ref after the game. Ireland dealt with it pretty well. The managers and the coaching staff and the players even were, you know, they didn't moan or complain too much about it. They were upset, but it left a bad taste.
Of course.
And I'm sure it left a bad taste for the Dutch too.
Yeah. Not based on their celebrations, but nevertheless. Let's see, my red card, I went with Sebastian Giovinco. I didn't like doing this because I like Sebastian Giovinco. But you just scored in the 89th minute on a penalty to narrow your team's deficit to one goal. As you're running back for the restart, you get caught up in some pettiness with Wilfried Zahibo of New England. Put your hands on his face.
Oh, no.
You can't do it. It's simple. That's a red card. So was it worth it? Like, Zahibo tries to knock the ball out of Javinko's hands as he's running back.
Right.
Javinko's trying to get the quick restart. They're down a goal now. Zahibo knocks it out, and Javinko stops, turns around, goes up to him, and grabs him by the face. And it's red. Toronto lost the match. They're now second to last in the East. They've lost six of nine this season. They've been starting games horribly this year, trying to fight their way back. That was the case in this one against the Revs. It's just absolutely... And then this red card. So now he'll be suspended. I saw Michael Bradley's comments afterwards that this rule needs to be looked at, that there needs to be some discretion that the ref can use.
For hands and face?
Yes, because MLS draws a very hard line where if you make any contact with the face, regardless of how serious or how much damage it does, doesn't matter. That's it. Red card. So I actually think Michael Bradley is correct, that I do think there is a place for discretion. But the fact of the matter is, this is the rule right now.
You know the rule.
And you know all of these guys in MLS, they all know this. do whatever you want, but the face is off limits. I don't know. When I saw him do that and the way it kind of, I don't know if they're going to go on and get the tying goal, but not only does it kill momentum in that game, but it could hurt them moving forward. That's the last thing they need right now, especially with Josie already out 4 to 6 weeks with his injury. Man, I keep saying they're going to figure it out. They're going to turn it around. There's too much talent there, and I still believe that. But boy, you could not have pictured a worse start to the season than what you're getting right now.
And for fans, you don't want Giovinco to constantly cut such a frustrated figure considering what's going on off the field.
Yep.
Caught offsides, man of the match.
You.
Borussia Mönchengladbach fans with a relegation countdown clock in the away end that was adjusted as the minutes ticked closer to the relegation, the first time ever in their history of Hamburg from top flight German football over the weekend. I just thought that was next level football trolling. It was unbelievable.
Because they have their clock of how long they've been up, right? Hamburg does.
Yeah, and they have their relegation clock. Which, I mean, fair play to Mönchengladbach. They do seem like a club and a fan base with a sense of humour, but that was excellent trolling. And, of course, Hamburg fans, they didn't respond well to their relegation.
No, this is on FS2.
Fireworks, flares being let off. Play coming to an end. It's suspended. They're going to have to play out the final few seconds there. Hamburg are heading for Zweite Liga, but this is an embarrassing end to the longest running, uninterrupted stay in the top flight. 55 years. They've been struggling. 5 of the last 7 years, they've finished 14th or lower. The last 5 years have been nerve-wracking pretty much, albeit for a 10th place finish in 2016 under Bruno Labbadia, who is now guiding Wolfsburg at their expense to a relegation playoff. Automatic relegation is Hamburg's, and this is what's happening. The reaction from the fans, pretty embarrassing.
My favorite part of the video, JJ, is when the police on horseback are riding across the field. It looked like the fight scene from Anchorman. It was insanity.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand.
It was madness.
It was. I think if you like a good mounted police football-related incident, look at the Scottish Cup final from the 70s at Hampden Park, Rangers v Celtic, where it's just mounted police, waves of them.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Is that it for you?
That's me.
My man of the match is Michael Carrick. After 464 appearances for Manchester United, Carrick made his final one on Sunday, assuming he doesn't play in the FA Cup final, which it certainly doesn't seem like that's going to happen. He was given a guard of honor before the match, received a massive ovation when he was subbed out late in the game. He addressed the crowd afterwards, paid tribute to Sir Alex, also thanked Jose Mourinho for allowing him to step into what appears to be a coaching role now under Mourinho. Rui Faria, who's Jose's number two for 18 years, was it?
I can't believe it. He's gone.
Yeah. And so now it doesn't, I don't know that Carrick, I don't think Carrick will be stepping into that role right away, but Jose Mourinho sounds like he's very excited to be able to kind of mentor and tutor Carrick as he tries to make his way through the coaching ranks as well. Sir Alex always referred to Carrick as one of the most underrated players in the league. He was instrumental in all of their success. And yeah. He will be missed as a Premier League star. Hasn't been for a few years. Little injuries here and there have kind of undermined him, but it was a great career.
Came in and took the huge mantle from Roy Keane and took the 16 jersey at Manchester United.
Yeah. So there you go. That is it. Man, I'm scared to look how long this has been. Devonlings, Wednesday. All of our awards. It should be a glorious, glorious event. A beautiful night out. I know you've already got your tuxedo T-shirt ready to go. It should be really, really nice and classy.
I can't wait for it. And yeah. Billy Crystal's pulled out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
So we have two options.
Yeah.
You want to hear the options?
Sure.
We have Jimmy Fallon.
Uh-huh.
Or we have Jimmy Kimmel.
I thought you were... are you leaning in one direction?
I say we go with neither.
Oh, wow. That's really, really harsh. I think they're both extraordinarily talented, but I guess it'll just have to be us.
I think we can do it.
Well, I believe that we can as well. Hey.
Take you later, fun boy.
See you later, man.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.